Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. You are listening to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood on Missed Apex Podcast. We are an independent Formula One podcast that aims to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping this clean here so you can play this with kids in the background or at work. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, and I've wrestled control back from Matt Trumpets and the Tech Nerds. I think you'll agree that Matt producing is the right thing to do. Look, I'm mostly in the way when they talk about their aero and everything anyway. I know Matt had a few audio issues, but it was mostly solid, so bear with us while we get Matt's audio nailed down. He is very embarrassed about the burping. In his defense, he's normally on Skype to my show, so he just mutes Skype if he wants to do something like that. Of course, he completely forgot that he was the one recording the audio at his end. This issue has been addressed, and it won't happen again, we promise. But tonight, I'm joined in the shed again by paddock regular Joe Saywood and star of the recent Ted's Notebook on Sky. Joe, how's it going?
Very good. I didn't realise one could be a star on Ted Kravitz's Notebook, but there you are.
We were very, very excited to see you there, Joe. And I was sitting there going, oh my God, he's cheated on me. He's patronising another stammering idiot behind my back on TV.
Steady on. Ted won't be very impressed by that news.
Oh, but you were so mean to him. All he did was ask you a simple question and you were that stupid boy.
Well, it was a dumb question, but the reason I did that was because I'd been in deep conversation with Andy Palmer of Aston Martin, and Ted and his crew had started filming us without permission. And I didn't know if they got the audio on or not. So when I finished talking to Andy, I went to see Ted, and he was on air at the time, which is how it happened. So I just wanted to say, oi, you, if that's got audio, drop it.
So you were actually just hunting him down, and then he took his opportunity to grab you.
Yes, and then he asked the question about Aston Martin because he'd seen me talking to Andy Palmer, who is, of course, the CEO of Aston Martin.
I'm quite surprised you didn't say, you know, tune into, you know, GP Plus magazine to find out all the details of my conversation.
I'm not that clever, you know. Anyway, they would have cut that out if I'd done that, I'm sure. So it's not live, you know, it's all recorded.
Gasp. I am shocked, but I'm really curious now, having seen someone I've spoken to being jumped in the paddock, how does that work? Are you just wandering around constantly ready for people to grab you and have quick chats with you on various nations' TV feeds?
Not really, but it happens occasionally. Ted does it from time to time, but actually, no, this time I sought out Ted because I wanted to just check that he wasn't recording stuff he wasn't supposed to be hearing, you know.
Oh, that's cool. So is there like a beef between you and Kravitz? You're like, oi, Kravitz.
No, not at all. But I mean, you know, it's just a sort of one has to be careful of cameras in the Formula One paddock because lots of people have them. And, you know, sometimes you'll find a camera being pointed at you and you don't know if it's got volume on it or not. So, I mean, I usually just say lots of rude words, but.
And then they're forced to beep it.
Well, in theory, they are. But no, it's just, you know, particularly the FOM television guys quite often are wandering around with cameras and you don't know if their microphones are live or not. So,
well, I'll tell you what, Will McAlpine is asking, I guess you're not telling us what the audio would have been of then, Joe. Because, of course, this is the big news that Aston Martin are going to be the title sponsor next year of Red Bull Racing.
Yes, but I mean, if you'd read me the JSBM newsletter, if I'm going to plug things, the Aston Martin Red Bull connection was in about 6 weeks ago. And so Andy and I go back a long time anyway, and quite a lot of years. And we were just having a chat about what's going on. And because there are various options ahead of them. I did have a conversation with a different Aston Martin executive. And I said, how are you getting on with the takeover of Red Bull Racing? And he said, well, maybe it's the other way around.
Maybe Red Bull are taking over Aston Martin.
Well, maybe the entity known as Red Bull these days might be taking over Aston Martin. I did hear that Christian Horner was off looking for venture capital money, because when Red Bull pulls out, maybe Christian Horner Racing or Arden Motorsport with Adrian Newey as a shareholder might be taking over the car company as well as the racing team. Who knows? There's lots of options, because Aston Martin's not the healthiest of car companies, which is why it's quite surprising that they are getting into Formula One in theory sponsorship. They will have the title sponsor name, but are they paying for it in the same way that a title sponsor would? Maybe they are from royalties on the cars, but maybe not.
Maybe they're providing some sort of technical or racing support. Is that?
No. I think that they might be providing a future.
I see. So I'm trying to get this picture sort of clear in my head. So we'll have Aston Martin or Arden Racing with
Just assume that Christian Horner is an ambitious young man like Enzo Ferrari used to be. Okay.
I bet he is.
Christian's won lots of championships. He's only 12 years old still. And he's married to a Spice Girl. He lives in a big house, I'm sure. So he's got things to do. Maybe he thought he'd go out to the markets and find himself a venture capitalist and buy the car company as well.
I think that would be exciting. He's certainly now a real personality of F1, and certainly has all the ingredients and the pedigree and the experience to do such a thing.
He's an interesting player. He's actually, would you believe, he is now the longest standing Formula One team principal who is active.
Well, there you go.
Because Frank Williams is still, in theory, the longest standing Formula One team principal, but he's not really active. So Christian is actually, everybody else, if you go through all the teams, everybody else has gone. He is the oldest now. Well, not the oldest, he's the longest standing, sorry.
So he sort of came in with Whitmarsh and the like in that kind of
way. Well, he came in about 2006, maybe, 7, I don't know, 10 years ago. And everybody else has changed.
Does he also own a second-tier team as well, or he helps run a second-tier team?
He owns Arden. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
He originally owned Arden in the old days. It's a very long and twisted story, and it relates back to Aston Martin things right back to the very beginning, because his next-door neighbour was David Richards, and his racing team, when he decided that he wasn't a very good racing driver, he started his own racing team called Arden. And he struggled along a little bit. And then David Richards came along and said, look, I've got these Russians I don't really want as sponsors. Do you want to take them? And that was called Lukoil. And that's what set up Arden.
That's absolutely fascinating. So, yeah, that's exciting for the future. But the more immediate future, people are kind of a little confused, because they're not going to be sticking an Aston Martin lump in the back, are they? Because don't Mercedes help with the production of their road car engines?
Well, Aston Martin has a number of engine suppliers, at least two anyway. One is Cosworth and one is Mercedes. Mercedes has 5% of Aston Martin, which is an irrelevant percentage, but they have it nonetheless. But I don't think that they want to get involved any more than that.
Well,
it's a commercial deal. They're making money off selling engines.
And it's funny to see what the nature of this deal might be, because Dominic Byrne in the chat room is saying, so it's Aston Martin Red Bull Racing Honda for 2019 then?
Not necessarily, because the concept of it being a Honda engine was before the Aston Martin deal was done. So it doesn't make sense. Right now you have an Aston Martin Red Bull Tag Heuer. They have an engine named after a watch, of course. The word is that Renault doesn't want to supply them after the end of 18, and the tag hire deal comes to an end at the end of 18 at the moment. So who knows? I mean, maybe they'll just do a deal with Renault to get it for two more years, buy some old engines off them. I don't know what they're going to do, but I think it's a bit of a stretch to think that, anybody would be able to build them an engine of their own before 19, but it's possible.
So are we facing a kind of a situation that we've had to come to terms with McLaren and them kind of descending into the midfield and beyond and having to fight their way back there? Are we just having to sort of face this new reality where the entity of Red Bull is no longer one of the premier F1 teams and it's going to just become, not just, but be a privateer team that's going to struggle to have glories on the podium every now and then?
Not necessarily, because it depends on money, really. Most of the problems, I mean, there are problems which are not solved by money, which are like the Honda problem at McLaren. But if you have a competent engine builder and you have a different set of regulations, remember, we've got new regulations coming. So if you have a competent engine builder and a set of regulations that restrict the importance of money in the performance of the engine, then you can have a lot of people who come in at different with different machinery, call different things. Maybe it's the same machinery, maybe it's not. But, you know, you can have Porsche coming in, you can have Mercedes still in, you can have Renault in, you can have Honda in, you can have Ferrari in, you can have Alfa Romeo, Aston Martin. Did I say Porsche already? I can't remember.
Yeah.
But you can also have McLaren with their own engine. You can have Red Bull with effectively their own engine, because it wouldn't be called Red Bull anyway by then.
And in all these shuffles that we've had obviously a bit of driver confirmation, but it's been the most excitement has been around these engine changes. Obviously, the biggest ones have been McLaren taking on Renault. And then it feels like Toro Rosso, almost out of nowhere, although we did hear stuff, you know, at the beginning of the season, have ended up taking the bullet that Sauber dodged, in my opinion. And it feels like this could be real trouble for Toro Rosso. Can the team...
Well, hang on. You're making an assumption here.
Yes, I am.
Your assumption is that the Honda engine will never be any good. You're talking about the engine that finished in the top 10 last weekend in Singapore. Actually, more than in the top 10. You're talking about Honda, which is a major motor company. So I think it's a little bit harsh to say that. And I also think that Sauber was entirely daft to do what they did. All they did by getting rid of Honda was become a satellite Ferrari team.
Where they could have effectively been the works team next season.
They could have been the works team. And what did they have to lose? They were going to finish last this year with a Honda engine. If they weren't last, they'd improved.
So, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one who is sitting here thinking...
I forgot to mention the pile of money that comes with the Honda engines.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that it was not a tiny factor in Toro Rosso making that decision. But I can't be the only one sitting here thinking, well, we haven't seen any evidence of Honda, despite their name and heritage. We haven't seen any evidence of them producing power or that they're just about to turn a corner. Indeed, were they just about to turn a corner, surely McLaren would have picked up on this and not ended the relationship.
Yeah, but you're missing a key point.
That's likely.
which is there are certain teams who don't fundamentally care about performance, because if you're last, it doesn't matter what engine you have in the back. And if you're saving a pile of money or making a pile of money, therefore you are a stronger team. So Sauber, by running off, maybe they get a deal because they're going to run two Ferrari drivers next year. And maybe they would have to pay for the Hondas. Who knows? But the fact is that if you're the only Honda team or you're the third Ferrari supply, what difference is it? You're never going to win a race as a third Ferrari team. You're just not. History proves this. You know, a second Ferrari team has only won a race once. Some people will argue that in 1961 that, you know, somebody else did it. But the fact is that the Toro Rosso of Sebastian Vettel at Monza on a day when the McLaren drivers screwed up completely was the only person ever to win a race in a customer Ferrari.
So you are quite optimistic about, you know, Toro Rosso's chances, or at least you're saying it's a shot to nothing.
Well, what have they got to lose then with what they have now? So you might as well try something different. And if it comes good, it comes good.
Excellent, Joe. Obviously, you were there at Singapore. Were you anywhere near turn one?
Well, I was halfway down the pit straight as normal. So, no, I wasn't anywhere near turn one, but it was there was a certain amount of excitement in the world around me when this all happened.
It must have been an amazing one to be in the stands for. I think, you know, I was saying on the race review that this is one of those historic moments that will appear in clip shows and highlight shows forevermore. That was Spa 1998. It was Barcelona 2016. So just to see it in real life must have been epic.
I'm just trying to remember what those things were.
Come on, quicker.
It was very, very... well, if you didn't like Ferrari, it was very amusing. Which, believe me, there's a lot of people who don't, oddly. I just couldn't actually believe my eyes that they had done something so completely insane. I was actually a little bit sad in lots of ways because in their total incompetence, they did manage to take out Max Verstappen twice and also then take out Alonso, who was going around the outside of everything and would have ended up second if he'd actually got through all the mayhem, which is an interesting concept. McLaren in second place is all quite shocking. But where would it have ended at the end of the afternoon? We don't know that. But Alonso sort of said that he reckoned he could have stayed on the podium if he'd made it around the first corner. You know, yeah, of course he could. The fish was this big that got away. You know, it was huge. But there you are. You know, it ruined the race, and in a way it made the race. But at the same time, you know, there was still a... It was a good tense race because Lewis still had to, sort of hang on. And was he a happy boy at the end of it all? Wow.
And he wasn't really even like, you know, whooping and cheering. It was just almost you could hear the disbelief in his voice that it had just been handed to him like that.
Well, he's just a big smiley on legs, to be honest. That's what he was. Because he realized that not only had they messed up, but from the world championship point of view, he's got to seriously have things go wrong now to lose.
Yeah, he was making comments in an interview somewhere that we've seen some of Sebastian Vettel's weaknesses, probably referring to, you know, Baku, losing it there, getting a drive-through penalty, costing him the win, costing what everyone thought was a win here in Singapore. And I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the Ferrari garage that evening because, boy, did Vettel sound apologetic after he'd spun out. It was really like, I'm really sorry, guys. I'm really sorry. There was no anger. There was none of this. He hit me. You know, no blaming Max Verstappen.
No, there was some muppet in the Ferrari tweeter department or whatever it's called, yes, who tried to blame Verstappen, but I think he had his head removed from his shoulders quite rapidly, which actually I'm a great believer in doing that to the whole of the Ferrari communication department, who are completely useless. But there you are. That's another story.
Well, I mean, it's irrelevant.
If you want people on your side, you have to learn to talk to them first.
So we'd hardly see the Ferrari principal on interviews. We rarely hear anything from them in and around the race weekend.
I believe that Ted Kravitz and Mark Webber both on air sort of wandered past Ferrari and said, well, we're not allowed to talk to them.
Yeah, wow. Stuff.
They're now, people are getting fed up with it. I'm fed up with it already. I just think they're idiots. But, you know, they probably think they're not, which is why they're paid the big bucks, you know. But I'm afraid that Maurizio Riva-Bene's got his bum hanging out of his trousers, as far as I'm concerned, because he ain't going to win the world championship.
No, I mean, you can kind of blame the drivers, though, on this occasion.
No, you can't. He's the team principal. You take the bullet.
Fair enough. Yeah. Do you think there'll be repercussions for Vettel if he was deemed to have caused that? Because, you know, I'm wondering, like, what's his position like at Ferrari? Is he bulletproof? Is he beyond being dropped?
They love him beyond compare. No, he's beyond being dropped, but the other lots aren't. So, I don't know. Just the whole thing seems to be there's an emperor and a bunch of lackeys running around behind him, to be honest. I think the technical guys are doing a terrific job, but I think from a marketing point of view, Ferrari's a disaster.
So do you mean like it's hurting the larger Ferrari brand as well?
No, nothing's going to hurt the Ferrari brand because there's always people with gold chains and too much money and who want to go buy a Ferrari and, you know, loads of money and show off to their friends that they're newly made people. But no, I just think it if people don't like you because you're not helpful, what good does it do you? Okay, if you have the Italian press like a bunch of baying hounds on your tail all the time, that's one thing. I can understand that. But, you know, at least you don't have to block the entire press corps, all the television. They block everybody. They won't talk to anybody. It's just insanity. It's a communication business. I don't know if anyone's told them this, but Formula One is a communication business. This is what they're in. They think they're there selling cars, but they're not. They're communicating. And the communication results in them selling cars. They're fortunate because, as I said, there's lots of rich people who think Ferraris, you know, give them a bigger chest or something like that. But, you know, Ferrari's just a car.
I'm glad you said chest. Thanks, Joe.
Don't worry, I was going to say something else, but I thought it's a family show.
Ask your young uncles, kids. They'll explain everything to you. But the chat room is suggesting, you know, who would you replace Vettel with if you did want to get rid of him? Daniel Ricciardo, people are suggesting.
They're not going to get rid of Sebastian Vettel.
Is there nothing he could do? So anything he does will be completely tolerated.
Well, I suppose if he took his trousers off and ran naked around Maranello molesting little old ladies, yes, perhaps he would. But I don't think that's going to happen, really.
Yeah, ask your creepy uncle about that one, kids. Okay, so Mercedes then. Lewis Hamilton, like you said, he's walking around like a big smiley thing. He's absolutely full of confidence. Of course, he was full of confidence before his engine blew up last year in Malaysia as well.
He went to some fashion week and was wearing the most hideous clothing. So, you know, he's obviously not entirely sensible still, but he's, you know, nonetheless, he's quite happy.
Well, I think that's pretty standard, though, for Lewis Hamilton now.
This was even bad taste for him, I have to say.
You obviously don't fancy follow him on Instagram, Joe.
No, I don't follow him on Instagram. This is true, yes. But let him lead his life, I say. He does a fine job racing driver, and what do we care what he does in his spare time? Apart from the fact that what he was wearing in that particular occasion was hideous. But there you are.
Well, I'll agree with you to a point, because I'm a huge Lewis Hamilton fan, but he is also a dog parent, where he calls his dog his children and refers to himself as daddy when talking about his dogs. And to me, that's nearly enough to stop being a Lewis Hamilton fan.
Whatever turns him on, I suppose. But I suppose one day he'll have little kiddies of his own, then things will be different.
Absolutely. So speaking of his future then, what do you sort of hear long term? Because everyone loves to jump on any time he says something about his retirement or he's going to go for Schumacher's 7 titles or something. He's staying around, isn't he? I know he has his little ups and downs in his moods, and he says, you know, maybe I've had enough.
He has fewer ups and downs these days than he used to. He's much more solid. I can't see him stopping until he ceases to enjoy it, and he clearly enjoys it now. And he's the best, you know. I know that the Vettel fans will get upset to hear that, but he is the best.
I read the comments on your blog when you post the podcast link. Well, I mean, basically, whichever driver you praise, you get called biased, but particularly with Lewis Hamilton.
Well, it's whatever you do, you get called biased. I get called biased all the time, which kind of annoys me, but I don't let it annoy me because otherwise people would do it more because it annoys me. So,
Do you want me to edit that out?
No, because basically, you know, what people don't understand is that calling a journalist biased is like insulting them. And now, if you want to insult me, that's fine. But at least have some basis for doing it. You know, people say, well, you support Lewis Hamilton. This is with their mouth open because they have to breathe through it. you support Lewis Hamilton because you're English. Well, yes, I am English, or used to be, but I've lived in France for 25 years. So how does that work? You know, I'm a European. I'm sorry that Brexit has messed that up, but I am a European. So for the mouth breathers out there, don't bother calling me biased. Yes. I mean, actually, they probably wouldn't have found this because that involves, you know, typing more than three keyboard thingamabobs. What do they call them? Keys at the same time. So
they
there
are
we are.
Keys. Well, for the non-mouth breathers among you, go to www.missedapexpodcast.com to find all the audio and video that we put out on Missed Apex Podcast. And you can find us at Missed Apex F1 to find out when we're going to go live. Joe, you do a magazine that people can subscribe to that is called GP Plus Magazine. I presume you're still doing that.
Yes, I am indeed. Yes. And I am one of a team. It's not my own magazine. I do have my own magazine. It's called JSBM Newsletter. Uh-huh. And it's the really good stuff I don't put on anywhere. So you have to pay for that. But, you know, there is a point at which one gets bored of giving away all the best stuff. So on the blog, you get a lot of good stuff. The really good stuff is in the JSBM Newsletter. And Grand Prix Plus is a magazine that comes out 6 hours after each race with the whole story of the race and lots of interesting features and knowledge, things that people with open mouths don't necessarily get.
That's hilarious. I love that. I mean, you're absolutely right. A journalist should be impartial and unbiased. I'm a podcaster, not a journalist. Hashtag 44. Four championships, baby. Okay, but let's talk about Mercedes, because to win more championships, he's going to need
the
car.
That's terribly, terribly biased, I have to say.
Oh, but no. How did you find out, Joe? You found out my deepest, darkest secret.
Oh, there's nothing wrong. If you're not pretending to be a journalist, that's fine.
Yeah, no, but I've always supported the British drivers, obviously. Yeah. And I think that's an okay thing to do.
Yeah. I just think as a journalist, you can have your secret favorites, but that shouldn't come across. I mean, I can tell you that I watch races, and when certain drivers go out, I go, "Oh." But I don't tell people who those drivers are. Because it's, you know, I'm a journalist. My job is to tell them what happens. So, you know, I rate certain drivers, which is not the same as liking them. You know, I think some of them are better than others. And I make those points based on what I think is fact. Other people have alternative facts, obviously. Statistics are not always the right answer. Usually they are, but not always. You know, there's lots of ways that one can argue these things. And I end up arguing most of them. So anyway, it's, you know, it's a matter of, you do what you think is best, and that's as long as you keep doing that, you're a journalist.
We do have many journalists appear here, not of your stature, Joe, but we have a young autosport journalist called Chris Stevens who comes on here, and you can see he's in that same mode and mindset as you, because we poke and prod him, trying to get him to like make a divisive, you know, statement, or really just lay his sand in the ground on an issue. And he's always very political, and he's trying to be, you know, smooth, and but we don't let him get away with it.
That's what our job is. And people misunderstand that. You know, if I go after Jean Todt and tell him he has a weak decision, he takes it as a personal attack. It's not. It's just because I happen to think that he made a weak decision. And that's my job as a journalist, to do that. Now, I will praise him if he does good things within the motor racing fraternity. You know, I, for example, I don't believe that road safety has got anything to do with motor racing. And I think the halo is not good for the sport. I understand why he did it, and I understand his paranoias about legal actions against racing drivers' families who are taking legal action against you. But motorsport is about dangerous things. You've got to be heroes, and that's what people forget. If you're not heroes, you lose a lot of people who follow.
Absolutely. We just try and get Chris Stevens fired from motorsport. That's our motivation. We just mean.
Well, don't worry. They'll probably take care of the whole problem before too long by overstretching with the whole motorsport network thing. It owns everything in the world now, including Chessington Zoo, I think. But, you know, they I don't know how long it'll last. Costs an awful lot of money to keep empires going.
Well, it's worth mentioning that Missed Apex podcast is available for sale, and I will cash in all my morals for a reasonable amount of money. Shout out to the chat room who found us by going to Missed Apex podcast /livestream and clicking the YouTube link. Click subscribe and the little bell, and you can join us in the live stream, like Dominic Byrne, who's pointed out that actually Hamilton is a vegan dog parent. And James Funnel saying, Joe wins comment of the week for mouth breathers, I'm sure. Joshua Clare saying, Spanners, it's not a secret. Yes, I know it's not. That was the joke. And also in there, is there an alternative universe where Ericsson is good? Random. And obviously not, no. Okay, so...
Hold on just a minute.
I knew it! Yes!
Ericsson is no fool. He's not as good as Pascal Verlaine, and he's not as good as some of the others, quite a lot of the others, but that doesn't make him bad. People jump on the case of drivers at the back end. They say Jolyon Palmer's no good. They say this, they say that. These guys are all good, and we should have some respect for them, because they are Grand Prix drivers, and we're not. And they got there largely through their own talent. There is a huge amount of talent all the way through motor racing. So don't, you know, it's not the days in the old days. We did have some fairly sizable onanists and kids. You can look that one up if you can spell it, who got through to Formula One. But, you know, they should never have got through. But in that era, you could do it. Nowadays, you can't. Even if you've got loads of money, you've got to be talented as well. So Marcus is a talented guy. Now, he's not as talented as Pascal, but that's another story.
Okay, well, I kind of get where you're coming from, but in the Premiership, you could argue that all those teams are really, really good to get to the Premiership. But if you ask me...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
My opinion on West Ham, I will give it to you in detail. More detail is exponentially increased with the amount of pints I have, maybe even the square of the amount of pints I have. So,
are you a West Ham supporter? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm trying to say the opposite of that, Joseph.
Okay, I don't know enough about football. All I know is that West Ham beat Fulham in the 1970 whatever it was, FA Cup final. I was very upset because I lived in Fulham at the time, so I'd never been a West Ham fan. And they sang a really bad song about bubbles as well.
Whatever. West Ham. Up the U's. Anyway, so if Lewis Hamilton is going to win more world championships, he needs a really good car underneath him, because obviously, as we've seen, if you put Fernando Alonso in a car that's not competitive, he can drive the back end off it, but he's never going to be right up the front. Is Mercedes in it for the long term? Because for recent fans who are not as old as some people, including me, Red Bull will have been a stalwart of Formula One for them already. 25-year-olds will have known Red Bull there being a foundation of their Formula One fandom, and now it looks like they're drifting away. So are we also going to see Mercedes drifting away and losing interest? Or, you know, what happens when they stop dominating?
Well, there are cycles in all these things. You know, I grew up when Williams and McLaren were the big teams, and now I look at it and they're not there anymore. I grew up when Brabham was still around, and Brabham was a great team. If they are badly run or do not have the right things, they fail. If they fail, they disappear. And I think that Mercedes will go on being successful as long as they keep funding it all right and keep the right people and keep the right motivations. There may come a day when they decide to quit. But then you also need to look at their sales of silver cars particularly and of AMG cars. And they're absolutely unbelievable growth they've had
from Formula One.
Years. Who knows? Can you prove it? The old thing about, you know, win on Sunday, sell on Monday may be or may not be true, but there's certainly a link between the two in that people want to be associated with success. Now, Red Bull went through a particular phase where they were able to win without a works engine. But, you know, if Renault hadn't been caught cheating in 2009.
Oh, no, it's not allegedly, is it? No, they did.
That's, yeah. It's not allegedly because they admitted it.
Just checking.
It.
Yeah. Peter Wright keeps an eye on us.
I've been through this a few times myself. They were caught cheating and they left. As a result of it, they didn't have a works team anymore, which gave the works status to Red Bull, which is why Red Bull won all those championships. So there was an element of good fortune in that as well, which you have to remember.
So, yeah, the chat room saying Mercedes look like a pretty slick operation from the outside. I mean, they certainly throw cash and manpower out of it. And the more money you throw at it, the more people you can have. And you can just process your way out of problems. And that looks like that's what Mercedes does.
Well, yes, but so does Ferrari, you know, and so does Red Bull to a large extent. I think the other thing you can do is you can go up every avenue of research and development that the smaller teams can't do. They can't afford to go and look at every single thing. They have to choose their targets. And if you're choosing things, you're probably going to miss little things that the others will get. Now, the skill is to get it down to being not about money. Formula One's always been about money to some extent, but it's also about cleverness. And what you want to do is negate the money to a large extent and have cleverness as being an important factor. I mean, Force India, as a points per dollar spent, are probably the world champions, I should think.
And is it possible for someone in this era to come along with a double diffuser or a six-wheeled car and just suddenly just innovate their way to the front of the grid, do you think?
Well, you can't do it with a six-wheeled car because it's against the rules. Aww. But you could do it with a clever bit of aero, yeah.
Like a double-decker rear wing or one of those weird front wings that they ran in Monaco with the high T-bars at the front.
Well, the thing is that so much is now legislated that there's very little margin for maneuver for engineers, which is sad because you want them to be sort of looking around and doing stuff. So it's a hard one.
Excellent. Okay, so you're talking about, the teams that were your big teams when you were in your, I don't know, I don't want to say in your heyday, Joe, because you're still very much in your heyday. When you were younger, what's a polite way to dig myself out of this?
In my youth, you can say.
In your youth, phew. Thank you very much, Joe. Williams, and obviously they're one of the big players left that have got a seat available for next season. And when I asked, have people got questions for Joe, it was Williams, Williams, Williams. We've got probably three main protagonists for that seat. So firstly, who's got the biggest chance? And is it a seat you want?
Well, if you're a racing driver, any seat in Formula One is what you want. So it's not a seat that Fernando Alonso necessarily wants or even Sergio Perez. But if you offered that seat to Pascal Verlaine, he would rip the seams off it to get his hands on it. He can't, however, because they need a 25-year-old. So it seems at the moment they're down to the dear old beloved stage of Felipe Massa, who's now going to be drawing his pension fairly soon, and who has not really been a match for Lance Stroll, which means that he's not quick enough anymore. As much as I love Felipe and he's a super bloke, I don't think he's quick enough anymore. Robert Kubica, maybe he was a great driver in his day, but he smashed himself up pretty conclusively. If you actually get to see him, his arm is a big old mess.
Yes, I mean, I was quite shocked when I saw that. And when you see him climbing in and out of the car in that Hungary test, he's not using that arm to help him get in. He cradles that arm.
No, he'd be a one-armed driver, to be honest. Now, is that something that will work for you? Maybe, maybe not. But if he was so good, how come Renault aren't taking him?
And you called that, Joe. You said that right from the beginning when they were speculating. You said Renault are being nice. Renault are giving him, days out and exposure. But you didn't see that as a realistic option.
No, I didn't. And to be fair, I don't know. The thing about Williams is who's making the decisions. And, because they've made some poor decisions as well, I have to say, over the years. And I think that what they really need more than anything else is, I mean, obviously they needed financial stability and Stroll's a sort of good option for that. But you've got to have a really quick driver in the other car if you're going to have Lance. I mean, Lance is good. Is he world championship level? That's another question. But you've got to have some real class driver there or whatever you can get. Now, Felipe was a class driver in his day. Kubica was a class driver in his day. Who's the third one in the picture? I can't even remember.
Well, people are talking about the Scott, Paul de Resta, as an option.
That's just not even conceivable in my book.
Don't break our hearts. We like
Paul.
No,
no. Well, I like Paul as well, but I just don't think that's really a sensible option. If it was me, I'd take Julian Palmer because he's the best all-round option they've got with experience. Okay, he does have money actually, or money will follow him. But he's not that bad, and he's had a bad year. He's been very unlucky. But you've got to look at who's available, and you've got to have somebody over 25. If there was no 25 thing, I'd get Verlaine in a flash.
So yesterday we had on Matthew Summerfield, who's a technical writer for motorsport.com, and he was taking us through the upgrades. He obviously follows the technical upgrades path, and he's saying, I'll do it in his voice, obviously.
Well, you've got to understand that Palmer never got the right upgrades at the same time.
And he was actually, you know, laying out that actually Palmer's been up against it. And when you've seen the gaps in qualifying, you've got to kind of give a little bit of slack because the out-and-out performance is with, say, for example, a new floor that Hülkenberg had for two races earlier.
Yeah, but you've also got to bear in mind how good Hülkenberg is. You know, if you're going up against Hülkenberg and you can get quite close to him, you're doing pretty well. It's clear that, you know, you're not talking about Jolyon as being the next Fernando Alonso or the next Lewis Hamilton, but he's a good racing driver. He won the GP2 championship. You don't do that unless you're good. So as an interim measure for a couple of years, as a Brit, as a good-looking guy, as da-di-da-di-da, all these things that they could use him for, I see him as a much more sensible choice than any of the others.
Well, he's got all the raw ingredients. Like you say, he's easy on the camera. He's a charming, rich young man. And I bet that if he could pull a few results together, just like at the end of last season, the media would rally around him. People would rally. He's probably the sort of champion, the British racing driver people want. So there'll be a lot of goodwill.
Oh, but just think back to the days when Damon Hill got a Williams. Damon Hill had no great reputation at that time, but he did good work for them, and they appreciated that. David Coulthard was a complete rookie, but he did good work for them. They gave him a chance. Nigel Mansell was pretty much not written off, but he was on the downward slide when he joined Williams. So, you know, don't knock it. The thing is, Williams's fundamental problem is not about drivers. It doesn't help that they are where they are. Their fundamental problem is building a good car. They have a Mercedes engines and they're not doing the job against Force India, let alone Mercedes. They should be up there challenging Mercedes. What happened is that in 2014, they had a decent car and it was quite close to Mercedes. It actually took pole position on occasion, but it's gone downhill ever since. Why is that? And how can it get fixed? They need to change. They need to change some people, some things. And if it's not, you know, you can change the aero team five times. Williams have done it in the past. But maybe you've got to look also at who's calling the targets. Because if you have five sets of aerodynamicists who don't work, it's the person making the targets who's getting it wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unlikely that you've picked five bad batches of aero team, I think, is what you're getting. And someone asked me the same question about why they were so dominant in 2014. Was that perhaps a little bit helped by Mercedes having an even bigger gap? And weren't they fully exploiting the engine gap by just saying, right, we're just going to make a rocket ship, have very slippery, no aero, and we're just going to do like 14 rocket launches a lap and see where that gets us?
I don't know. I don't know really the details. All I know is that from 14 onwards, they've gone backwards.
Yeah, they have.
And they've done it statistically as well as in perception terms. So is that to do with leadership? Is that to do with technical leadership? Is it to do with the people caring? There's lots of questions you have to ask.
And speaking of questions I want to ask you, you left two loose threads dangling about 5 minutes ago that I've got to get to. You said, well, who's calling the shots at Williams? And you said it all cryptically as if like clever people would know. I'm not one of them, Joe. Who is calling the shots at Williams?
That may be the problem.
Oh, don't. I'm, honestly, just no, talk no. to me as you that, would a child.
No, that may be the problem. We don't know who's calling the shots, or the people calling the shots don't know enough about racing. You know, that's a very good question. Is Paddy Lowe calling the shots? Is Claire Williams? Is it somebody else? We don't know. And you know, that's what you have to. Great racing teams have a strong leader. All of them have a strong leader. And if you don't have a strong leader who's dragging the thing forward, you don't have people. If you have a team boss who walks into the workshop and some people in the workshop aren't frightened a little bit by him or her being there, there's something wrong. Because team bosses need to be a little bit feared. They need to be getting people to work at their very best. They don't want comfortable people. You don't want people who are happy to go home at 5:34 every afternoon.
So we've got loads of Williams fans that obviously listen here, and everyone's looking for a glint of hope. So in the chat room, they're saying, I was expecting to see, this is Joshua, more of an impact from Paddy Lowe by this point, unless Williams have already put all their eggs into the 2018 basket. And I think that's the big hope, that they've seen it coming early. They've got their Lance Stroll money and they've gone, all right, Paddy, you concentrate on 2018 and let us, you know, just try and have this battle with Force India for now, for this season.
Yeah, it's fair enough. But the only answer to that question is we have to wait and see. You know, I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing an awful lot of movement in the staff. There's new people came in. Some old people went away. But am I seeing enough of that to make me think, okay, this thing's on the move?
Well, you
I don't
have,
know.
You
I don't have... know. But, you know, sometimes you just have to wait to see the result. You can't judge it until you see it. Now, if Paddy Lowe's the be-all and end-all, logically, next year's car will be a rocket ship.
Well, if you can have that hope in Honda, I can have this hope in Williams, surely, Joe. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Williams, always have been. And it pains me to see them in this kind of mess. But, you know, that's something that only they can fix and time will tell.
Absolutely. And are you willing, because you said you'd seen some pretty bad decisions at Williams over the years, are you willing to give us your favourite example of such a bad decision?
Yes. Taking on Nakajima as a driver because Toyota wanted it. That was not clever.
Excellent. Great fun. Joe, thank you so much. You've been generous with your time, as always. I would like to get a couple of little points out of you, though, because what are you making out of this simmering apparent beef between Haas and Renault? We hear the drivers kind of making these little snipes at each other, little things being given away on the team radio. And then you've got Gene Haas making a statement about, yeah, Renault are doing okay, but they've got a long way to go, and they're beating us, big achievement, and they're not beating the big boys. There just seems to be sort of shade being thrown, and I just wondered if you knew anything about where that beef's coming from.
I think it comes from an on-track problem between Grosjean and Hülkenberg, actually.
Hungary.
There's been a bit of needle there, and I think that's drifted down into the teams a little bit. You know, Haas is right. They're in their second year. And Renault is a long-established team. Okay, they needed to rebuild, and it was a big mess left over from the Lopez gang of lunatics who were running it. And, you know, they completely damaged it. So, you know, you could say, quite rightly, that Renault should be doing a lot better than they are. But then again, their budget's probably not as good as Haas's. Everyone thinks because they're a manufacturer, they have a big budget, but they don't necessarily.
Well, you say they don't necessarily. Is that down to what they're able to put in or what they're willing to put in?
Well, it's down to what their top management is willing to give them. Whereas in Haas's case, Haas can just look into his rather big piggy bank and just pull out some more if he wants to. Although he has to fund a NASCAR team as well. He's got four-car NASCAR team, two of the cars at the moment needing funding. So
I'm a bit ignorant on Gene Haas's personal wealth. Is he like
Lance
Stroll, billionaire type, or...?
He's certainly up in that level. I'm not sure if he's bigger than Stroll. There are lots of people in the world bigger than Stroll. Stroll's not that rich.
Not around here, there's not.
Not around my place either, but Mr. Latifi, father of the Formula 2 driver Nicholas Latifi, is worth a great deal more money than Mr. Stroll is. And, you know, there's plenty of people around with plenty of cash.
So Gene Haas, then, for him, it's kind of... Okay, so it's obviously a passion of his. He wants to get into Formula One. Is it the kind of thing where if they start creeping up and giving success, then he'll add more value to what he's going to put in? Or do you see him, this is a bit of a splash and dash?
I think his thinking was that he'd go racing and sell more machine tools around the world. I'm not sure whether or not that's achieving its goals or not. I have to ask him. I don't think he likes traveling as much. NASCAR is quite easy, you know, you just... Uh-huh. You only have to fly short distances. So we don't see him as many races as perhaps we ought to. And one has to ask the question, he's on a 3-year program. Is he going to fund it after the third year? We'll see. But having said that, you know, he's built a very successful team, mainly thanks to Günther Steiner, who is a super bloke, very down to earth, very sensible, very straight speaking. And you have to say they've done a terrific job. Now, they've used Ferrari to do that, and they've paid Ferrari a lot of money. But that's clever.
So obviously, Gene Haas is not a shy bloke, and that seems to have permeated. A lot of the teams are very reserved, yet they seem...
No, I don't agree with that. I think Gene Haas is a very shy bloke, funnily enough, but he's not very open by nature.
Right. I see.
He's an engineering type. He's, you know, he sort of stares off into the middle distance from time to time. And you can't communicate with him, you know, this kind of thing.
A warrior poet.
Tell me, well, I'll take your word for it. I call it an engineer, you know. bonkers type, you know.
So you must be getting ready then to pack your bags and head off to Malaysia for the last time. And I lobbied my wife. I said, do you mind if I just spend £1,000 to fly to Malaysia, sit at turn one in the K-stand because it's going away? And she sent me an emoji, the one with just the tears crying from the eyes emoji. And that was it. That was the last communication of the day. So I'm not going. But are you sad that this is your last Malaysian Grand Prix?
Pillage the bank account, I say. Leave her behind for the weekend with a little note on the fireplace saying, you can look after the kids, dear.
I may have to leave her for a bit longer if I do that.
Yeah, well, that's what Formula One's all about, I think. So, I mean, it's sad. We've been going there for 18 years, and it's a nice place. They're nice people. They don't really fit in with the modern ethos of Formula One. They haven't developed into the motor sport valley of Asia that they were planning to do. There are bigger and stronger nations. The nation itself has sort of drifted into away from the goals of the great leader, Mahathir Mohamad, who incidentally, I don't know if you saw, I wrote today, is standing for election to come back to power at the age of 92 because he's so pissed off with the people who took over from him. Good for him.
Absolutely. And definitely go find Joe Bloggs F1, where you kind of, you know, you laid out a little bit about the history of F1 going to Asia, and that being spearheaded by the Malaysian Grand Prix. Absolutely epic for some old dude to go, nope, this is not the way I want it. Vote for me again. I imagine he would be like a one policy type guy, come in, make the change, and then stand down.
I know he did. I mean, he created the modern Malaysia, which is remarkable. Unfortunately, he couldn't stay on as the leader because they thought he was too old. But the people who took over just messed it up. I mean, Malaysia is an amazingly interesting place. They have built these incredible cities. They built incredible industries they never had before. It was all oil palms beforehand. You know, it was what he did is remarkable. He's a very remarkable human being. But, you know, sometimes you have to leave office. So he's just coming back saying, I'm not doing this. To hell with this lot. I'm going to go on till I go down fighting.
Philip Allen in the chat room there is saying, yes, Malaysia's a great circuit. Bit hot and sticky, mind. Are you one who likes these hot climbs?
Do I look like a bloke who likes hot climbs? Yeah, no, I get sweaty. And it's hard work, Malaysia. It really is tough because it is. What are you doing?
You should try a bit of this face powder I use for the live stream, Joe. It makes you look less sweaty. That's a top tip. It's called Collections Pressed Powder. I'll send you a batch.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I don't have anybody sort of pampering me. It's quite fun when you do television. They come and these ladies come in rushing in the commercial breaks and pamper you. But I'm afraid we don't have commercial breaks. Incidentally, why don't we have commercial breaks? Somebody out there, give us some money for doing this genius show.
I'm on it. Email spannersready@gmail.com. Joe, so people are saying that the stands are empty when they go there. Does that mean it's not financially viable? Is that why it's coming?
No, it's not financially viable because it used to survive on a lot of people coming up from Singapore. Then the Singapore Grand Prix came along and really damaged it. They're too close together. They're only about 500 miles apart or something. And it's just, you know, the country's changed and it's just sad in a way because it was a nice place to go and we'll miss it. But, you know, we'll move on. We've always moved on. We've often gone to some pretty horrid places and we forget them over time. So
that's true. Who do you fancy then? Who do you fancy in the Malaysian Grand Prix?
I think you've got to say it's a bit of a half and half track, but I believe the chances of rain is like 80% on Saturday or Sunday. But you never know with weather forecasters. I mean, now there's a job where you can't go wrong. You get paid loads of money for getting it wrong every time.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because if it rained every race, Formula One would just be not a really very good sport at all. But the fact that you've got this...
It'd be great racing, though.
They could probably do with, you know, losing a bit of traction, and you do see a different kind of driver come to the forefront. But if it was always raining, you would just get guys who are really good at planting it and keep sticking it. But now what you've got is basically dry weather specialists, and then you mix it up and you have a different event and it mixes up the grid beautifully.
Maybe, but I think you'd still the best guys are still the best guys. So, you know, in the wet, you might see Max Verstappen coming forward. You'd see Vettel. You'd see Alonso. You'd see Hamilton. Dan Ricciardo too, probably, you know. But they're not all, you know, they're not all experts in the wet. And the wet is all about they always say that the wet gives you the true indication of talent, which is an interesting way of looking at it. But, you know, they used to say that Caracciola was the rain master. And if you look at what he achieved in the rain, yes, it's pretty spectacular. But basically, great drivers do well in the wet because, you know, they have to use their car control more.
Absolutely. And speaking of great drivers, the chat room is bugging me to ask you about Ocon. He's got another season with Sergio Perez. That's a blinder. That potentially, that could make his reputation cemented next year when he probably, according to most pundits at the moment, you know, ends up taking him to the cleaners in 2018.
Well, yeah, I think that Sergio was hoping to go to Renault and got a little bit caught out. Certainly, I expected that to happen. I think he expected it to happen, and I think he's now stuck in a situation where he has to say, well, what the hell, I'm just going to have to fight Ocon. I don't think he minds fighting Ocon, but whether he can beat him over the long term is a question we have to wait and see.
I really like Perez. I've been waiting for him to get his big break in a top team for ages, and I think it might have just come, you know, too late. Maybe he's peaked already.
I hate to remind you, but he did have his big break in a big team and he blew it.
Yeah, but against the amazing Jenson Button.
Exactly my point.
Yeah, no, all right, you know, fair enough, yeah. And you'd be lucky to get two big shots like that. And maybe he's just on the downward curve and he's just a marker in Ocon's story now. And that's just
no, I think he just did too much too soon and wasn't ready for it. And I think that, you know, he's come back, he's got himself together. He's a very good driver. But is he ever going to get another chance in a top team? It's like the Hulk, you know, the Hulk should have been in the top team, but is he going to get the chance now? Don't know.
Possibly not.
Maybe with Renault.
And see, at least with Sergio Perez, we'll always have that time he hilariously punted off Kimi Raikkonen and made Kimi Raikkonen mad at Monaco. But the Hulk is up against it as well, because he now has the very, very talented and much fancied Carlos Sainz up against him. So that is a battle I'm really looking forward to. That's juicy.
Yeah. Maybe. It depends how much you rate Carlos Sainz, I suppose. Yeah.
Loads.
Clearly you do. I'm reserving my judgment. We'll see.
Ah, your famous journalistic lack of bias.
Can't help it. Born that way.
Joe, thank you so much for your time. Obviously, people can find you on Twitter at Joe Saywood, correct? And go to find Joe Blogs F1 online. Click on your face to buy your super secret behind the scenes newsletter.
Mm-hmm. And Grand Prix Plus, the magazine, of course. 6 hours after the race, 90 odd pages of absolute amazing race reports and pictures. We have lovely pictures too.
All right, let's not talk about your pictures, Joe. It's a family show.
No. It's Peter Nygaard of Grand Prix Photo from Copenhagen takes wonderful pictures and has been doing it for 30 years as well. The four people involved in Grand Prix Plus between us have more than 2,000 Grand Prix. So that's kind of scary.
Do you want to plug their Twitters as well?
I don't believe they have Twitter. They're older. They're older folks.
I don't understand. How do they make their political viewpoints known in an angry echo chamber?
They write for other things sometimes, or they don't, as the case may be.
Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for your time. Guys, if I haven't been too annoying, you can also follow me at SpannersReady. If you fancy doing me a solid favour, look at my pinned tweet. I'm trying to encourage my 9-year-old nephew who has just made a Lego video on YouTube and is really discouraged by having had no views. So if you could see it in your heart to retweet that tweet, click on it and give his little YouTube page a like, I would be very, very grateful. Until next time with the Malaysian Grand Prix.
Hang on. What's it called?
What, his YouTube video?
Yeah.
Oh, the thing is, when you search the YouTube video, he just called it Let's Build Lego. There are a million videos called Let's
Build Lego. How do you find it?
So you go to the pinned tweet at SpannersReady. Thank you very much, Joe. And you click that. The link is there. He's very cute. He's northern, so that makes it even more sad.
Oh, that's it then. Not going to do it.
make his day. And I don't want him to be discouraged. I want to make him pick that camera up again. So I hope I see you all after the Malaysian Grand Prix, Sunday, 8 p.m. Until then, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Inside F1 with Joe Saywood. Come on, Joe, you know you want to rock out.
No.
That's a hard no, isn't it? That's a hard no.
Yeah. I used to be. Yeah. In me youth.
Love to have all seen right. it. You must have been a punk, Joe.
I was that era, yeah. Yeah, I didn't pierce myself in any nasty positions, but there you are. All right, so tell me how to do this Lego thing. I'll do it now.
Oh, you're going to do it? Just go at Spanners Ready. That's me.
At Spanners Ready. Awfully complicated. At Spanners Ready on what, though?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.